I'm sorry I made you turn the TV off.
It's okay. It's all right.
I don't want you to be distracted.
My mind is like a steel trap when it comes to PCMC.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I have a gift for you.
What? What is it?
I have two gifts, actually. This is Jinx. She's a member of the Hive. They're the main villains to the Teen Titans.
Okay.
And then this is the evil version of Starfire. These are minifigs. Now, if you want, all their parts come out, and you can, like, rearrange them.
Now, let me ask you a question, because you didn't want these two. Is that why I got them?
They were doubles.
Okay.
I basically went and bought a whole box.
You're in deep.
I'm kind of at a place where... Yeah, you're right. I am in deep. I'm in deep with my Teen Titans fandom. But I keep going to Toys R Us because it's like,
They have nothing there for
me. How low does it go?
They have nothing there for me.
Nothing at all?
I went. No Voltron. No WWE
Voltron.
Figures I want.
It's interesting to see what doesn't sell. Like, I went to two today, and they both were stocked with Batman masks from Justice League. And boy, did nobody want those.
No.
Holy Jesus.
Those only sell around Halloween.
I guess kids don't want to cosplay as the Affleck.
No,
Batman.
No. They like the Bale.
Yeah.
And the West.
Yes, the kids love the Adam West.
They do.
I've actually shown Adam West to students. I don't know if you know, I'm a professor.
I did not know that.
I show the Adam West to students and they don't know what it is a lot of times. They're like, what is this? I'm like, that's Batman, the television program.
He did the Watusi.
And they're like, what is... Wow, he did do the Watusi.
Yeah, he did.
Did he call it the Batusi?
Yes, he did.
I look back at that and I see how clearly it was a comedy and I think, how dumb a kid was I that I didn't at all know that this was supposed to be funny?
Because you're under the impression, like most impressionable youth, that the Cape Crusaders are superheroes.
Right.
And that they're going to stop the diabolical plans of King Rootin' Tootin'. Or the Riddler, or whoever it is that week. Only as you get older do you realize, oh, wait a minute, okay, Frank Gorsh as the Riddler is rather comical.
Frank Gorshin's one of our great impressionists.
Yes.
He also was the villain in the original Disney That Darn Cat.
See, people don't know this. This is what we give you here. We give you 75 years of outdated references.
Absolutely. That Darn Cat was remade with Dougie Fresh in the 90s and Christina Ricci. I believe the cool title for it was TDC.
Really?
Like TDC. Because in the 90s, remember when after Terminator 2 came out and it was T2, everybody did that?
Everybody abbreved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to PCMC.
There you go. Shoehorning in reference after reference just to segue into an intro. Howdy doody, folks. My name is Emilio Sparks, and I am looking at Michael. I'm wearing shorts and jockey underwear, buongiorno.
Always wear the same kind of underwear. I have 40 of the exact same underwear.
Now, is that because of your OCD? Or do you just, once you get one brand, you're comfortable with it, so that's what you stay with?
About 7 years ago, I found this brand, and I was like, this is what my body needs. it's not too loose and bunchy like a boxer, but it's got the tightness of a brief, but it's, you know, I can't do the panties. I like it on the leg.
You told me a man should wear black underwear.
A gentleman like myself, a gentleman of my age, I feel, should wear black underwear because you never know what's going to happen.
Now, do all professors wear black underwear, or are you just the only one?
You know what? I don't know if I've ever been in a situation with other instructors where our underwear has come up.
Hey, listen, you don't know. You might be in a conversation one day and you'd be like, you know what? This is the type of underwear I wear.
Yeah.
What do you wear, professor?
I would get involved if the conversation happened, but I wouldn't be the one to bring it up. This is PCMC. That stands for Pop Culture Man Children.
But we just abbreviate.
That's who you and I are. We're the Pop Culture Man Children.
Eventually, the show will just be called PCMC.
This is a full episode.
This is a fully.
Not a mini.
No, a mini was last week.
Yes, and there'll be a mini next week. You see how that goes?
It's a pattern, guys, every week.
You like those toys that I gave you?
I do. They're actually adorable.
I like Jinx. She's fun. She's got the pink hair. And even though she's a bad guy, she is Cyborg's girlfriend. They love each other, but their love is unsanctioned.
It's like the Capulets versus the Montagues.
You know what? That's exactly what it's like. Let's go to the news! They're making a new Spawn, and Jamie Foxx is the Spawn. Thoughts?
It was about time. Fox washed the stink of the Spider-Man Sony vehicle he was in.
What was he, Electro?
Electro.
Yeah.
I like it. Todd McFarlane has been hyping up because I, you know, I liked his Facebook fan page. And
mm-hmm.
Todd will go on and draw pictures and yeah. He'll talk about, you know, yeah. little things. Like, oh, wait till you hear the announcement of who we casted yeah. to play Spawn. I like Jamie Foxx.
I like Jamie Foxx too, so. But do you like him as Spawn? I feel like I would rather do Sterling K. Brown, or I would rather do... The perfect person would be Idris Elba.
You don't think they're going to do what Deadpool does and infuse a little comedy?
Well, that's not something that Spawn has done before.
The only thing that I know of Spawn was one of my friends in high school was such a fantastic artist at 15.
Sure.
That he could draw from memory Spawn versus the Violator, and everything looked like the comic.
I don't know the Violator.
You don't know the Violator? The Violator no. was the nemesis of Spawn.
Why don't I remember that?
The big devil.
I feel like on
thing.
The HBO show, all he did was like fuck up street toughs.
Yeah, it was like the Max.
You know what? I'm gonna give it a shot. I like Jamie Foxx, and I like a lot of what he's done.
Well, I think they wanted
he
to
just
put,
didn't feel right to me. But what the fuck do
well,
I know?
I think they wanted to attach a big name, and
yeah.
what better way to do it than an Academy Award winning actor?
Well, he is a big name, you know, if we take a time machine back to 2005. I mean, look,
listen, the Oscars still holds weight.
It could be the comeback he needs.
I liked Michael Jai White, who played the original Spawn in the movie.
That was not great.
You didn't like John Leguizamo as Clown?
I don't think anyone liked John Leguizamo.
And then he turned into the Violator.
Do you know that he really ate maggots in that movie? There's a scene where he takes a piece of pizza with maggots on it and he bites it, and he really did it. Can you imagine giving that much to your art and then the movie was Spawn?
Well, I mean, he had to get in character.
I mean, it's one thing if you're De Niro and you lose a lot of weight to being Raging Bull, but forever this guy ate maggots for Spawn.
He's that method.
You think so?
I think he is.
He's good. He's underrated, I think.
Let me tell you something. In my place of work, he's come up and hung out on one particular show
because
he's
right?
friends with the host a whole bunch of times. He's cool as shit. He's funny.
He is awesome.
Yeah, he's very funny. He gets it.
His shows are really good, like his stage shows.
I used to like his comedy show on Fox called House of Buggin'.
I don't remember House of
Buggin'. House of Buggin' was the Latino version of In Living Color.
Oh, so it was sketches.
Mm-hmm, it was sketch comedy. It was very good.
I doubt he'll be back to play Clown. They'll probably cast...
But see, he should reprise the role as Clown. Because he gets it. He understands it.
No, I think they want to...
play the role.
From what I understand from the people who like the comics, Clown was not so jokey, and people didn't like Leguizamo's take on the character.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't know. Venom's coming back. It feels like the 90s again. We're getting into that... It's funny. What you're seeing in comic book movies is taking the same patterns that the comic books were doing, which is like now we're getting into that, you know, Deadpool, Venom. We're getting to that, you know,
gritty.
Everyone's going to be super muscular and not have feet. Despite the failure of the Power Rangers movie, I'm one of two people who liked it. You hated it, which I understand.
I don't like it.
I love them. But anyway, I know that I'm wrong. I'm a man who can know when he's wrong.
They're doing a sequel?
No, they're not.
Oh, thank God.
Well, they've got a new owner now. Bandai, which was the company that owned Power Rangers, was sold to Hasbro. And Hasbro is trying to make a cinematic universe, which will include the Transformers, but then also, like, a bunch of their other shit.
So, are we getting a Transformers reboot as well?
No, I think that
there's only so much of that I can
think
take.
The Power Rangers are just going to show up in the Transformerverse. Why not? I mean, it's a world with Zords. I have no idea.
So wait,
but there's
going to
be new Power Rangers movies is the point.
So we see the Dinobots team up with the Power Rangers?
Well, I know that they want to do a Hasbro cinematic universe, but there's the new Bumblebee movie and there's like a million. So it's like they've got a pretty established Transformerverse. So I'm not sure. It's all very tentative, but the idea is we bought this property and it's a hot property. Okay, they fucked up with it 2 years ago. We're going to do it again.
But isn't that because of Saban? Didn't he have his hands in it?
Right. With Hans Saban was the owner of the show, and Bandai owned the toys.
Yes.
But I'm not sure where one ends, one begins, because Hasbro's a toy company, but now they
make movies.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what's happening.
Why does everything need a cinematic universe? Can't it just be... Listen, you tried. It failed. It sucked.
No, because Power Rangers is still a viable franchise.
It is. But is it a franchise that is based on whatever season it's up to now, which I feel like it's up to 310? Or are you still going with the originals that are established when we were children? Where it's going to be Tommy and Kimberly and Trini and Steve.
There was
and
very
Bob.
Little. There was no Bob. There might have been a Bob at some point.
Power Ranger Bob. Sounds like a name to have. Bilbo.
Yeah. It's like Peter from X-Force.
Yeah.
It's Bob, everybody. Yeah, hey, Bob.
Hey, look, it's Power Ranger Mel.
Mel would be a cool female Power Ranger.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, it's Mel.
It's Mel. She hits you on the arm, like, hey.
Yeah.
It's Mel. I don't.
Very little. I like that Mel still talks like, oh, yeah, Mel. Very little is known about these movies, so they might, you know, go with some of the other ones and not go back to the original series.
So Power Rangers in Space, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, which is, like, it spins off every year or 2 years, so it's kind of continuing, but it's also kind of, like, had 900 spinoffs.
Can I rattle off a couple of Power Ranger titles and tell me when did you stop watching?
Okay, sure.
Okay. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, 1993.
That's the OG. That's the shit. That's the good shit.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers second season, 94.
Of course.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers season 3.
Mm-hmm,
okay, 95. Mighty Morphin Alien Power Rangers, 96.
I was in it. I was part of it.
Power Rangers Zeo,
mm-hmm.
96.
I did it.
Power Rangers Turbo, 97.
I was starting to falter.
Power Rangers in Space, 98.
I was done.
Power Rangers Lost Galaxy, 99.
I was coming into my own, becoming a man.
Power Rangers Lightspeed Rescue, 2000.
Are you making these up now?
Oh, no.
Are these real?
Oh, yes. Power Rangers Time Force, 2001.
That one I heard about. Is that the one where they're like cops in the future and everyone's a Power Ranger? Like, being a Power Ranger is like a city job.
There are Time
like,
Force
people
police.
Like, I'm going to... You know, I think about going to college, but I might just take the Power Ranger test.
No, that one was actually deep. Listen to this. Ready? When a mutant and his daughter escape custody of the Time Force police in the year 3000. Yeah,
like
that's
it.
The whole plot. Power Rangers Wild Force, 2002.
I remember the toys for that. They were, like, very jungly.
Power Rangers Ninja Storm, 2003.
That was another popular one.
Yes, this one was popular, too. Power Rangers Dino Thunder in 2004. Power Rangers SPD, 2005.
What does that mean?
Space Patrol Delta.
Oh, I'm a dick, sorry.
I mean, come on.
My bad.
Power Rangers Mystic Force, 2006.
Wow. Do you have a description there of that?
A sorceress enlists the help of Chip Thorne.
Oh, Chip Thorne's in that?
Chip Thorne.
Yeah.
Power Rangers Operation Overdrive, 2007. Power Rangers Jungle Fury. They went back to... More jungle stuff. In
I feel like a lot of it's the same ideas that they keep going through.
Ready for this one?
Space, dinosaurs, animals.
Power Rangers RPM, 2009.
What's RPM? Revs per minute?
Revs per minute, maybe, yeah. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, 2010. A rebroadcast of the first half of the first season of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers with an updated opening sequence, visual effects, and original episode.
I've seen some of those. They make it look a little better.
Yeah. Power Rangers Samurai, 2011 and 2012.
You still see toys for that.
Yes, you do. Season 20, Power Rangers Mega Force, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Power Rangers Super Mega Force, 2014.
I mean, obviously. Where are you going to go?
Then we got two seasons of Power Rangers Dino Charge. See, you're right. It goes from computers to dinosaurs to trucks back to computers.
They keep going back to the dinosaur well.
Wait, here we go. This one. Wait. Power Rangers Ninja Steel, and then followed by Power Rangers Super Ninja Steel.
That's another one they go back to, ninjas.
Yeah. And finally, Season 26... Power Rangers Beast Morphers, which is not available yet. It's
ooh, we're looking forward to that.
To be announced.
Listen,
so that's 26.
Wow.
When did you fall off?
Like 4 or 5?
Yeah. I fell off after...
When there were none of the original members
Oh,
involved.
I was seasons 1, 2, and 3. I was not there for 3.5, which was that weird alien one.
Yeah.
I saw Zeo... Part of Turbo, and I was gone. But also at this point, too, we were also starting to sprout pubes.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're at that time where we were young enough for the first seasons to be really influential on us, but then we were becoming...
It wasn't cool.
In 97, how old were you? 14.
Yeah, you were 14.
That's
you were
on a the, tender age.
You were on the cusp of procreating yourself.
Yeah, I probably should have not even really been into Power Rangers as much as I was... Although, look at me now. I just gave you Teen Titans toys.
I appreciate that, though. But then I binge-watched on Twitch. When the movie was coming on in the theaters, Twitch ran every season.
Really?
So I watched almost all of this nonsense on Twitch.
Did you really?
I would have long viewing marathon sessions.
Did you pay attention, or was it just sort of the wallpaper?
Certain seasons, it was just wallpaper.
Because as you were reading those titles, some of that was fresh to you. Some of that, I could tell you were not,
most
not really
of,
know
like,
much
the
about.
Like the SPD and all the Ninja Force shit.
Yeah.
Like, and some of the dinos I watched. But I was glued for the first four seasons.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you had Jason David Frank.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kimberly and, you know, Power Ranger Cliff. You know, you had them all.
Cliff was my favorite.
Cliff was adorable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah. So, no, I don't know, man. Like... Really? Is this what you're going to do? Why don't you... If we're into the gritty stuff, give me the old Power Rangers. Give me them... I want them old...
Oh, as old men?
In a dystopian
like
society.
Like Old Man Logan?
Yeah, give me... Like Old Man Logan, give me Old Man Tommy.
Jason's like an old age home, and then Tommy comes in, and he's like...
Throws him his communicator, and goes, it's morphin' time.
And he's like, nah, I can't morph anymore.
And he's like, what, my morphine drip? He's like, no. Morphin' time.
It's morphin' time. Is it morphine time? It's my favorite time of day. Just mix it in with my applesauce. Last piece of news, you'll care about this. They're making a Jared Leto Joker movie. Just Jared Leto all the time. All Jared Leto, 24 hours a day.
You know, this warms my heart right now.
Yeah, who doesn't want a spinoff from the highly successful Suicide Squad?
Did you ever watch it?
Nope.
You should, it's really good actually.
Is it?
Yeah, it's enjoyable, I liked it.
I feel like you've turned on this. When you first saw it, you were not this high on it.
You also have to remember, I watched it on a phone screen, and it was a bootleg from a theater. Then, once it came on television, I softened to it.
I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And I'll probably watch this new movie.
But listen,
why don't they just put Wonder Woman in everything? Wonder Woman versus Jared Leto Joker.
You just want to see Jared Leto get his ass kicked.
I just want to see a character I care about.
But see, we get more Jared Leto, his little practical jokes, tormenting his constituents, his cast members, putting fake vomit and poop in their dressing rooms. Well, and they go, oh, that Jared Leto.
Yeah.
He's channeling Cesar Romero.
You'll have to have Harley in it, right?
I think you have to. But that was the dynamic. That's what worked in that movie.
Yeah.
It was those two.
Yeah. I guess I'll see it.
And he's another one who won an Academy Award.
I guess you don't even need Affleck.
No, just put Gal. Give Gal Gadot. I would love to see her just fight.
She's just the whole Justice League?
Yeah, just her. Well, they're not even doing Justice Leagues no more. The movies are just going to be standalone now. Like, Aquaman is a standalone. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no... like.
I feel like they made that movie 4 years ago, and they haven't released it yet. Well, what are they sitting on? What are they waiting for?
Well, according to Jason Momoa's Instagram, the film is wrapped.
I feel like it's been wrapped, no?
I think it has been for a while. It's coming out this year. Right?
We're already halfway through this year.
Right? Or is it coming out in early 2019?
I haven't heard hide or hair from this movie.
He backed out of The Crow. Him and the director.
Yeah.
He didn't say why. He was just like, we're out.
Maybe it's that curse.
Just stay away from it.
Stay away from The Crow.
It is a perfect film, though.
The Crow?
Yeah. You want to talk about 90s.
All right. Yes, absolutely. Talk about 90s. That's got to be a mini-sode.
That is just itself.
The Crow. And then the Crow VHS sequels.
No, I will not. No. Stairway to Heaven and City of Angels. No.
You want to go to Trailer Corner?
You want
to
mosey all over?
Rawhide. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Rawhide. Nothing good. I don't know.
You're really selling the peeps on Trailer Corner.
No, it's not the segment. The segment's solid gold. It's PCMC is, you know. We watched the Wreck-It Ralph 2 trailer. What were your thoughts?
I didn't see... Well, first off, it's Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Right.
And I don't.
But isn't it Wreck-It Ralph 2, colon, Ralph Breaks the Internet? Probably,
most likely. I didn't even see Wreck-It Ralph run to even understand what the character is, who he is.
One was overrated itself.
Okay.
Because it's supposed to be about video games, but then it ends up being a lot of, like, candy puns. Here's the one thing about the trailer that anyone seems interested in, is there seems to be like an Infinity War style Disney princess meetup in this movie.
Well, they did show that.
And that's cool. And it seems like...
And then the joke was very funny. It was like, well, what's with these big burly men always trying to save the day?
Yeah, yeah. And you had... It sounded like the actual voices for the newer princesses.
Yes.
And then you had sort of digital versions of older princesses like Snow White that you haven't seen that way before. So it looked cool. It just seems like a real Disney fest.
You know, just when we wanted to say we're tired of Disney and we're going to get other movies that don't have Star Wars in them.
And here's Stormtroopers.
Here's Stormtroopers.
Fucking with Princess Vanellope.
That's her name?
Vanellope.
Vanellope.
Yeah. Voiced by...
How many... parents are going to name their kid Vanellope in the coming year?
Oh, God, I hope none. I really hope none. Well, the movie came out a couple of years ago. I saw the movie with Joe.
Of course you did.
And
did he cry?
Yeah, but not about the movie. I saw the trailer of Bumblebee. I got to be honest, Bumblebee, I've not liked any of the other Transformer movies. The first one I had no issues with. And then, but I also didn't like, and then they just
got
increasingly,
to look at Megan Fox.
They got increasingly stupider. But this one kind of looks fun, or at least it looks warmer.
You know what it reminds me of? It's The Shape of Water with a car.
Is that right?
I think so.
So what, you think Bumblebee and Hailee Steinfeld, or?
I think they're into, I think there's a little bit of.
I love Hailee Steinfeld.
Automotive sexuality going on. Well, here's what I thought it was sensual about it, where, and I'm going to redo it for you, ready?
Sure.
You're Bumblebee.
Yeah.
And you're looking at me innocently.
Yeah, yeah. You're moving close to me.
I'm Hailee Steinfeld.
I think it's Steinfeld.
Whatever. I'm going to cup.
Yeah, that was a warm moment.
I'm going to cup your cheek with my hand.
It feels nice.
I'm
going to
look in your eyes. And then the way he
grabs
her.
But I read that almost like a dog, though.
Yeah?
I saw more of an Iron Giant feel to it. I think, especially because Bumblebee doesn't speak, so that allows it to be sweeter, you know what I mean? I saw, I did like that moment where she puts her hand up and he puts his, but to me I saw like a little puppy. I don't know. The last trailer that we both looked at was Lego 2.
The best one.
You know, I gotta tell you, as much as I love Lego, the product, and I love the Batman movie, I didn't love that first Lego movie.
I didn't see it.
And this new one, I don't even know what to think of. I'm like, eh.
Well, it's set in a dystopian society.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's what happens when you're made of building blocks.
I guess. I kind of felt like, eh.
I didn't get the first stuff, but I liked...
The first movie is good up until, I'd say, the last half hour.
But I like the happy-go-lucky guy.
I'm not so much on... And please don't crucify me, but I'm not so much on the Chris Pratt train.
No.
I like him as Star-Lord.
That's about it.
I don't like those Jurassic stuff that he's doing.
Didn't even watch it.
But it looked good to you. You thought it was the best trailer we looked at? I like Bumblebee more.
I thought some of the jokes were kind of funny. We got a Batman cameo. I hope it's Will Arnett.
Yeah, it is.
All right,
it
good. Is. That's what hooked me when I saw Will Arnett. I was like, all right, well, I have to see it.
Yeah,
now.
He's a big part of that franchise.
He has to be.
Yeah. Although what's funny is in the new Teen Titans Go movie, there is a Batman... But Will Arnett isn't voicing him. Jimmy Kimmel is.
Oh, God.
And Will Arnett is voicing Deathstroke, who they just call Slade because for some reason in Teen Titans Go, they don't want to say the word death.
Do you blame them?
I mean, I guess. I don't know. Slade's a kind of cooler name, especially because it pulls you away from Deadpool.
Yeah.
Who is a ripoff of Deathstroke.
Straight
but,
ripoff.
But is much cooler character now. We like him much more now.
Slade. You
should
have just had Joe Manganiello voice Slade.
You wanna connect
Keep
the
canon,
Teen
yeah.
Titan Go world with the...
I guarantee you it would be way more interesting.
I would love if the cyborg in Justice League acted like the cyborg from Teen Titans Go, which is screaming and eating pizza.
I wish.
Listening to The Night Begins to Shine. When I look at you...
Right,
I see the story
over
in
my
your
head now.
Eyes.
Over my head now.
All right, you want to take a break?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, you got to give me your Hulu login so I can binge watch this shit.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can make a profile if you want.
Really?
Sure.
Wow.
My brother has one, and he doesn't even live with me. And he named his profile Thief. So when I go to log on, it says Mike or Thief.
I'm going to do one. Freeloader.
Yeah, Freeloader.
There you go.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Get to 52 when we get to our year anniversary. I've got to get you a gift. I already have a gift. I don't have it yet, but I have it in my head.
Okay.
Maybe we should do it as a mini. Like, it should be like we should, like a nice celebration.
While we're here, mm-hmm. now, doing Pop Culture Man Children, you can give out all the information, where to find us, where to listen to us, and I will look and see how many episodes while we're doing that. So you Take the show.
Okay, great. So this is Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. Thank you so much for being with us. I am Mike Bongiorno, my co-host, More Than Meets the Eye, robot in disguise, Mr. Emilio Sparks is to my right. You can message Mr. Emilio Sparks at Emilio Sparks on Instagram.
Emilio Sparks.
Yes.
It's a full.
Okay.
It's a full episode.
That's right.
We can make it one segment.
Yeah. You can follow us on Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. Of course, you can listen to us anywhere podcasts are available. That's your Stitcher.
I don't.
Your Apple Music.
I don't.
Google Play.
I don't.
Your Spotify.
I don't.
Everywhere you want.
I don't.
Everywhere we are.
There you go. Stream us. Love us. Be us. Use the hashtag PCMC.
Hashtag PCMC. You know, share us. Mm-hmm. Share us with your loved ones.
Do the right thing.
You know, this Christmas, say Grandma. I didn't get you a gift, but I'm going to give you the gift of Pop Culture Man Children.
Yeah.
I got you a phone, and I downloaded every episode for you, and you give that to Grandma.
And listen, they make references that you'll understand, Grandma.
She'd be like, ooh, they're talking about Car 54. Where are you? I love that program.
Wow, they made a little Nemo reference. I used to love that comic strip as a little girl.
I love Michael Landon. I was such a big fan of his. He was such a looker.
He really was.
He was a looker. These boys are good. I like
this
show.
I felt the feels the last episode.
Did you?
The last episode I just watched, I felt the feels.
Of Highway?
Yeah.
Highway to Heaven?
I'm still on season one. It's a lot to get through.
Well, that was back when there were like 70 episodes a season.
It's almost 30. It's a lot. But this was a really good one. And that Victor French... Let me tell you.
No, you don't got to tell me about Victor French.
Come on. It doesn't get any better than Vic.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. No. So, speaking of TV shows, when the revival of Roseanne... Well, first, let's say that we're going to talk about Roseanne, the show, and then we're going to talk about Roseanne Barr, the...
Evil dictator.
I'm going to say human with quote marks.
Well, I remember when the show first started, you were very, very vocal about it, and... It was a series of text messages, and you're like, I want to save most of it for the show. Mm-hmm. But I loved it and hated it at the same time.
Yeah.
I had the same conversation with a good friend of mine, Laura, and she was like, I hate it. She loved the original series. She hated...
Me too.
She was like, it was magic.
I agree. I should preface by saying
everybody liked Roseanne. The original run.
I honestly think that the original Roseanne is the best sitcom ever.
It didn't have this bullshit.
No, it was a real depiction of the middle class. And it was feminist, but it was like ballsy and it was funny and the characters were real. She was the matriarch, but, you know, she was coming out of a time where you had these sitcoms where, you know, father knew best.
Yes.
And Roseanne was like, Roseanne.
Well,
this is me.
Well, see, I don't know how you grew up, but in my household, Roseanne was more indicative of how it looked when the mother controlled the household.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My memories of my childhood will always be that my mother was judge, jury, and executioner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where my father really wasn't. My father...
He was a Dan Connor type.
Exactly. Where he was like, oh, I don't know, ask your mother. That was always the key phrase. I don't know, ask your mother.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I mean, like a typical dad thing because he doesn't want to piss the wife off. Happy life, happy wife. When I would watch certain episodes of Roseanne, I would be like, oh, my mother would... handle it that way, you know, because my mother is a very strong, independent female, you know, and she said it years ago, like everything now that is becoming the in thing to do, being woke or being social justice warriors or whatever, my mother was that very early on.
Yeah,
and she instilled that in me.
And so was Roseanne.
And my brother.
Yeah.
But the difference is my mother stayed a working class wife.
Right. When you look at the original series, this is a series that had a gay wedding, episodes that dealt with child abuse. This was a series that dealt with domestic violence. This was a series that had, I think, one of the first gay kisses on TV. So Roseanne was coming back, and at first I was like, great, one of the best shows ever is coming back amongst all these revivals. What a great idea. But then I found out that Roseanne was not just a Trump supporter because, you know, I don't support Trump, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a crazy person. But I found out she's a crazy person.
Yeah.
She's not just a Trump supporter. She retweets conspiracy theories.
Is she friends with Jesse Ventura?
I don't know. She's got that vibe.
Yeah.
She was always a little bit crazy, you know. She was actually somebody who in the 80s talked about mental health and was kind of a mental health advocate, which was cool of her. So she always was a little bit on the edge and on the fringe, but she kind of switched fringe sides. When the new show was coming on, they said, you know, what we're going to show is we're going to show a family divided. Roseanne's going to be a Trump supporter and her sister Jackie's going to be a Hillary supporter.
Yeah, but then that changed.
Well, they didn't.
Real quick.
It was bullshit. They didn't really do that because Jackie was a Hillary supporter, but they made Jackie a joke. What ABC claimed in their marketing was, they basically said, don't worry, audience, this isn't a pro-Trump show. This is going to be a show about how families are broken up. And obviously, like, the executive producer was Sarah Gilbert, who plays Darlene, and she's a very liberal person. There was so many liberal people involved in it. It was this weird – even before this tweet, just watching the 9 episodes that were out, it was a show that was – it wasn't fitting because – you had the ideology of the original show and I guess of a lot of the crew. But then you had the giant crazy ideology of Roseanne as a person who you can't ignore because she's the show. So they tried so many ways to make it work. You know, in some of the episodes that work of the new 9, they basically turn her into Archie Bunker. They say, okay, Darlene will be the character that we care about and she's the loving one and we'll make Roseanne Archie. So Roseanne will say horrible things, but oh, she's old and crotchety. But that's not who the character was. You know, there was an interesting interview with some of the early writers, and they were saying, you know, forget how Roseanne Barr has changed. How can Roseanne Connor be the Roseanne Connor in the show who in season one, the villain is her sexist boss, and he calls her sugar and she hates it, and then she stages a factory strike. How does that woman go to support Trump? Going back to what you said when I told you I saw that first episode, it was like it felt familiar, but it also was wrong. It was like a dream. It's like when you have a dream and you see your grandma, but it's not really your grandma. That's what it was like. It was like, this is right, but wrong. Some of the episodes were better, some were worse, but I never really shirked that.
The jokes felt flat. Everything that was amazing about the show, the blue collar regalia was gone.
Right.
You know, even the way Dan Connor was highlighted and portrayed was a shell of once was.
They gave him nothing to do. In the first 4 episodes, he's just making fucking knock-knock jokes. It's not until episode 9 when he kind of freaks out when they have a flood in their basement that you use a good actor to do something. John could have been so underused. And so is Laurie Metcalf.
She was nominated for an Academy Award this year, and they played her like a kook. Now, listen.
I know. Like, they made her the most insane version of that character.
Also, you think of it this way, too, though. You know, towards the middle, after season 6, they started to make Jackie a weirdo.
Right. Jackie became more insane, and when they picked back up with this new series, they went with that extreme version of Jackie.
Yeah.
And they also wrote out the fact that she had a son, which was weird.
Gone.
And they canon
she was,
and they didn't
she
canon
was extremely level-headed in the first five seasons.
She was deep, you know. She was sort of in arrested development, but the reason was that she never totally got over her abuse as a child and her blaming her mother for her father's abuse. In this new one, she's just fucking wearing a pussy hat and...
It just didn't work.
Right. I mean, in the first episode, they have arguments about Trump. But they don't get into the nitty-gritty of it. Roseanne's like, well, he talked about jobs. And it's like, every person talks about jobs.
See, that's where I understood it. And I understood it from the construct that, like many, she is a misinformed American who had the wool pulled over her eyes with the rhetoric and the king's speech, if you will, about what was going on during the election and then the electoral process in which he became president.
Yeah.
So if they continued to go down that road and they actually had facts and they kept it as topical as they say they were going to, then I can understand. I get it. I understand the show. She's tired.
Yeah.
She's old. She has to drive Uber. Dan's retired. He's living on a fixed
income.
She's got
a bad knee that she can't get medicine for.
I get it. If they do it like that, then I can understand. Let's humanize this character. So that's why she supports who she supports.
Right. But she wanted it to be part of the show.
Exactly. And that's where somebody should have stepped in, like Sarah Gilman, and said, no, 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 no. Let's play it like this. You want this in? Okay, but let's do it from the construct that you are misinformed.
That's why I say the whole thing never totally fit. Because you have Sarah Gilbert and you have Wanda Sykes, who was writing for it. And you had people on one side that were like... It's like Roseanne was this, you know, there were hostages and Roseanne was this person in the room with a gun and she was like, I'm Roseanne and it's called Roseanne and you have to deal with me. And it's like they found ways to make it work a little bit, but in the end of the day, it didn't totally work.
Here's what I found out.
Trying to be two things at one.
And it was trying to be many things.
Yeah.
You can't be woke and then you can't be... conservative at the same time. It just doesn't work.
Right. Like, you can't have a transgendered grandson and totally love him, but at the same time.
But how great was that episode, though?
That was good.
That was Roseanne Conner. That was 80s and 90s Roseanne Conner to a T.
But I don't think that person votes for Trump.
I don't think so either.
Look, you could say that I'm being a liberal elite, and that's fine. I personally don't know anybody who adamantly supports Trump and is also a supporter of LGBTQ rights. And by the way, that was a great episode, but then that kid, they never give the kid anything else to do.
And he was a good actor.
Yeah, he was a good kid. He was cute, and maybe it should have been more than 9 episodes. I don't know.
They were supposed to wrap it up in a little bow because it was only 9, so there's only so much you could fit in. Right. And maybe if the seasons were going to go farther, maybe something would have worked. But listen, you had Harris.
Right.
I love that actor.
She barely did anything.
They did nothing with her. She's great as Debs in Shameless.
Right.
Give her something to do. She can act.
They had one episode that focused on her where Roseanne, like, is all about, like, you got to spank your kids. You millennials don't. And it's like, wait, there was an episode in the early series where she hit DJ.
And then she felt bad
because her father abused her and realized that she can do better. And that's the thing that breaks my heart where it's like, this isn't the character. This isn't Roseanne. And maybe it's true. Maybe it is true that sometimes as Americans get older, or as people get older, they get scarier. They become less informed. But it's heartbreaking to think of that happening to a character that was such a trailblazer.
Okay, so listen.
It might have been a cool idea. I mean, Roseanne would have been for this, but wouldn't it have been a cool idea if Roseanne started the series as a Trump supporter? The character started the series as a Trump supporter, and then by episode 9, she learned the facts from her daughter and her grandkids and was like, you know what? This guy lied to me. I'm not a Trump supporter anymore. That would have been really amazing. But, of course, that wouldn't have happened because Roseanne adamantly supports Trump.
All right, so I had a conversation with my friend Laura about this, and I asked her.
What does Laura do?
Laura she works for a publishing company in D.C.
Okay.
And I go, hey, give me all your thoughts on Roseanne, you know, because I'm doing a podcast and I'd like to mention you. And she goes, honestly, I felt duped. The woman that I looked up to as an intersectional feminist, pro-gay, lower-class hero is exposing the very real dark side of America. But in a way, that is less all in the family. aware in itself and in turn highlighting the good and the flawed and more last man standing. Don't get me started on that fucking thing with Tim Allen.
Which is coming back.
It is literally like me finding out my parents voted for Trump. Sure, you can remember all the good times they brought you up on, but what are they really doing to you by siding with those beliefs? How much of a visceral betrayal and sabotage is that? The woman that made me feel heard and taught me I should use my voice, no matter how piercing, is now on the side that is actively silencing millions.
Wow.
Darlene feels the same to me, thank God. She's actively working through how hard the world is, and that is the real saving grace.
Right. Darlene is the best part of the show. If the show were called Darlene,
it would work.
It would work. And maybe we might get that.
She was always the black sheep and the moody, weird, in a dark kind of way, and I like that. And I like that how she's changed and she's matured and she looks to take care of her children's weirdness.
Yeah, Darlene's change felt real to me because I do think that those moody, artistic people who are, you know, kind of like the outcast teenagers, they become just very loving, woke adults.
Weird means new things these days, and she is sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always loved the sweet moments between the sisters when they were growing up, but the kids' storylines are so tacked on now. Why the fuck is DJ even there? Question mark.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't give him a lot to do, but even what they gave him to do was just like...
Listen, Darlene's great because I told her, listen, you know, I like the idea that she's doing anything to pay the bills and she's working on the relationship and she's embracing her children's weirdness and she's getting frustrated at her family who doesn't always move along with her. Right. But the thing that I like was Darlene, the character, Sarah Gilbert, the actress... Mm-hmm. Always remains funny and sensitive to what's out there now.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was back then.
And that's a lot of what you see in these 9 episodes, where Darlene is the voice of reason saying to her mother, who's like Archie Bunker, what are you saying? This is crazy.
Yeah, but even that, though, there was this glistening shine of hope where Archie would get it. Right. And he would.
And also the show got it. Like, the show, All in the Family... set Archie up to be wrong. You as the audience are supposed to know this guy is funny because he's saying crazy shit, but he's incorrect.
And then he gets
Whereas
it.
Whereas Roseanne
and in certain
thinks
episodes,
she's right.
But in certain episodes, he gets it.
Right, right. He would be changed sometimes.
You know, to me, what lost me was that it was more political agenda than it was actual family struggle. So I didn't want the jargon of politics.
Right.
I wanted the family struggles. That's what I wanted.
Right, right, right.
Like, I love the fact that they were divvying up the medications.
Yeah, that to me felt like that's real Roseanne. But then they're talking about how they don't have money for medication, right? And I'm thinking, go on Obamacare. Obamacare is what you need, Connors. But because Roseanne isn't living in fucking reality... It ends up being what you see a lot with middle-class people who vote against themselves. They're the people that get hurt the most from the people that they open the door for. And the Connor characters, you know, Trump does not care about them.
Roseanne was always the mother that was flawed.
Yeah, yeah.
But she was flawed in a good way.
But in a real way. It was very realistic. I mean, as much as a sitcom can be, it was realistic. It wasn't corny. You saw them really deal with...
Here's why I think she was flawed, but she was also the perfect mother at the same time. Because she was the type of mother that was hardworking and championed equality. And that's something
originally.
It's something we didn't get in, what is it, season 9, season 10?
9.
We didn't get that. We didn't get that woman.
Watch the pilot. I have. Do you know I'm a professor?
I didn't know that.
And
What do you teach?
Oh, I teach many things. But one of the classes I teach is race, gender, and class in the media. And
you're a professor.
And for the last many years, I've showed the pilot to Roseanne because it's an amazing pilot and the whole sort of thesis of the show is right there. In the pilot, Dan is kind of being lazy and she wants Dan to fix the sink, but she's got to go work in a factory and then she's got to take off work to go have a teacher-parent conference and she's running everything and then her and Dan get into a fight and she says, "You think you're the king of the castle, but I do everything." And she basically explains the concept of second shift, but she works all day and then she has to come home and work at home. And I don't know if I can keep showing that pilot because as great as it is, now my heart is a little broken. And also Roseanne, you know, there is a body image thing where like Roseanne looked like American. Renee didn't look like a model. She looked like what real people sometimes look like.
Now, did you feel that maybe they were trying or they were going to ease it in where Roseanne was going to shift more into like the Bev role? But even though Bev was never highlighted in a flattering light at all in the first series.
Yeah.
The original run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there was also a likability to Bev, though, because she was that typical housewife that just took the shit in silence back then. And that's why Roseanne and Jackie didn't, like, that's why they didn't get along with the mother or approve of how the mother was as a woman.
But even Bev, who was brilliantly played by Estelle Parsons, who I can't believe is still alive, when she was in the new show, I was like, holy shit, I thought she was dead. Even Bev had depth. Like, think about the episode where Roseanne's father dies and it's the wake and Bev kind of confronts the other woman who her husband had been with. That's this great moment. That's the thing. Even besides the Trump, even besides everything else, this new season, it looked and sounded like Roseanne, but it didn't have that depth. It had the funny part, but then the other part, the truthful part that always made the show great, it was not there. It was not there. And we haven't yet talked about, to me, the most problematic episode, which is the episode with her Muslim neighbors. She's got neighbors of Middle Eastern descent, and she thinks they're terrorists, which is, first of all, it's 2018.
I rolled my eyes so hard.
It's 2018.
When I watched that.
Maybe that was a premise.
2001?
Yeah. To me, it's like, that's not the character. The character would not have done that. And, of course, she learns that they're people, and that's supposed to be the end of the episode. Like, oh, Roseanne learned. And it's like, but how did Roseanne get to this point where she's just fucking racist?
Well, that's when I checked out.
Right.
I was just like, I'm not fucking watching this
anymore. I checked out.
I can't care for this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't.
When I saw the preview of that and they were like, Roseanne deals with her Muslim neighbors, I was like, oh, shit, here we go. Here it is.
But, like, how do you go from the social dynamic and the family in the original series to what we see now? Like, aren't you self-aware of what the show originally was?
No, I don't think she is. I don't think Roseanne...
But shouldn't
Roseanne the person is.
But shouldn't the writers and Darlene, Sarah Gilbert, know what the fuck they're supposed
to
be doing with this?
I think Sarah Gilbert did. I think that's where I
didn't come off on film.
In some moments, it's there. That's the thing. That's why I say the thing doesn't fit, or it feels like it's trying to be two things at once. Because I can feel a struggle between, you know, Sarah Gilbert and the more sensible people working on the show and at ABC, and Roseanne letting her say what she wants to say but trying to find a way to frame it and being like, well, that's Roseanne or whatever. In the second to last episode, Roseanne, all of a sudden we find out, has an opiate problem, which is the real Roseanne would have made such a big deal out of that. And that, it's in moments like that they go, oh, this feels like Roseanne, because it's taking a real problem that's happening in middle class America. But at the end of the episode, they stop talking about it. It's like, done.
I think that they will get to examine more
in another season.
In the other season.
Yeah, well, after the first episode got such high ratings, ABC was like, we're going to do more. And so maybe, but I don't know.
I think they had the whole thing rolled out.
Yeah.
And they were like, all right, we tried. This is what is not working.
Yeah.
Let's see if this works. Again, let's go back to what got us to the dance originally.
Right. Which I'm sure someone like Sarah Gilbert was about.
Let's
like,
deal with DJ's PTSD in the war.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something on television that's never talked about.
Right, right.
Never. Never, because mental health in this country doesn't exist.
Right. No one talks about
it. Nobody talks about it. It's not, no, our soldiers don't come back fucked up. No, no, no. That doesn't exist. Right.
See, this is what I say when I say that it's heartbreaking, because there are these little moments in season 9 where I go, damn, that's a good idea, but they're not going to do it right.
No.
They're not going to put the respect into it. Or they're going to talk about it, but they're going to come to the wrong conclusion. They're talking about doing a spinoff of someone. What do you think about that?
If it's Darlene, yeah. You know, give me the father dynamic of her and Dan.
Yeah. Although part of me says, let's just
But I think John Goodman stays far away from this.
Well, John Goodman did something really interesting during the whole series, whereas whenever he was interviewed, he would sort of telegraph to the audience that he's not a Trump supporter. Like when him and Roseanne were both on Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Kimmel was asking her about supporting Trump, John Goodman kept making jokes at Trump's expense. So sort of winking at the audience and going, hey, I'm not crazy too. Even when asked, what do you think about your character being a Trump supporter? John Goodman said, well, there's nothing in the show that ever says that. We know that Roseanne's a character supporter. I think that Dan didn't vote for Trump, which is his own canon in his head.
But isn't that sad? That yeah. This is how polarizing a figure, the man that's running this country,
yeah,
has attached to him this filthy, disgusting stigma where you yeah. have to make your intentions clear. Like, no, I didn't do this.
Right.
I didn't do that.
Right.
This is democracy. This is freedom.
Yeah.
I need a break.
Yeah.
Could we pause? Yeah. I want to wet my whistle a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a break. I just feel like
I'm disappointed. You're disappointed. It could have been. So
I wish
much-
it hadn't happened. That's what I say. It was one of the best series ever, and now it's the best series asterisk. And then there was this weird fuck up season.
There was this weird 8 episodes that we didn't need.
We'll be right back.
In addition to my statement, I would like to say this has been a very difficult week. A lot of people have been hurt by this. I will say I'm proud of the show we made. The show... The show has always been about diversity, love, and inclusion. And it's sad to see it end in this way. I'm sad for the people who lost their jobs in the process. However, I do stand behind the decision that ABC made.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Mantra on PCMC.
Hello.
Subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
Do it.
So now we're in the obsessions.
Yes, we are.
Obsessions. What are you obsessed with?
Okay. It is a comic book.
A funny book? A picture book?
Well, I don't know how funny it is.
Uh-huh.
But I'll let you look at it. It's got a lot of weight to it, too.
Oh, it's hefty. Sandman, Neil Gaiman, Volume 1, Preludes and Nocturnes. I'm not sure what the word nocturne means. Like, nocturnal means night, right? Or yeah. living at night. So, nocturnes.
It's probably the same thing.
He's
never really in the daylight, Morpheus. It's always at night, because he's dream, the endless.
Okay, so here's the thing. I've never read Sandman, so I don't know anything about it.
Do
this.
I really got to give like a full dissertation on this, or could I just give
you
like...
No, you can give me... Why don't you give me a little summation?
A little sums?
Yeah.
How do I begin this? I finished Swamp Thing, which is an imprint on DC Vertigo.
Yes.
I move on to Sandman, which is an imprint of DC Vertigo.
Is everything okay at home?
After the 10 volumes of this,
yeah.
I'm going to Hellblazer, DC Vertigo.
What's happening? What's going on with you?
I don't know.
You're in a weird 90s dark space.
I wish I could go back to the 90s.
Really?
Yeah, I wish I can live in the 90s.
I think you'd get bored very quickly.
You think so?
Sometimes I think about it and I think
I'd probably have a really good job. I'd probably work for a .com or something. I'd probably do radio. I'd have a lot of money.
Save it. Yeah, but those .com jobs, those didn't last.
No, but I would work in radio and just invest in these .coms.
Well, you certainly wouldn't be a podcaster.
No, no, no.
That was not a thing.
No, I would have been a radio legend by now. Who would have burned his bridge?
Oh, you think at this point you'd even be on the down slide?
You'd be
ready for retirement.
I'd be doing radio in Iowa somewhere.
Well, you know, it's
talking about the yesteryears. I remember when I heard Alice in Chains for the first time. 10:52 in the a.m. It's Sparks in the Morning. How you doing?
Doesn't it feel good that you don't have to give time and temperature on a podcast? Because the time and temperature is always different.
But yeah, Sandman. Okay. So, this starts in that wonderful year of 1988, and it's very 80s in certain areas. Even the artwork is kind of indicative to Swamp Thing, if we want to compare certain things. But after 70 years, Dream the Endless escapes captivity.
Dream the Endless is a person, a being?
It's Morpheus, the Sandman.
Okay.
His name is Dream the Endless. He's part of the Endless. His sister is Death. His brother is Despair. And there's other ones too, like Greed and Lust and all these other ones. They're called the Endless. Those things that make up humanity. So anyway, he gets captured by an occultist. pre-World War II. And for 70 years, he is in this glass prison. And he doesn't say a word, and he kind of looks like Robert Smith of The Cure. And he's got, like, he's thin. Sure. And he's, do you even know who Robert Smith is?
Yeah.
Okay. He's got the same haircut, the whole nine. And
it was the 80s.
He decides to not say a word, and he knew that if I just be patient, I will outlive my captors, and I will escape. He escapes. 70 years later, he returns to his world, which is the dream world, and it's no longer, it's in peril. It's fucking, it's just shitty. Horrible. There's nothing, you know? All the dreams are running around themselves. They're all rogue. He was the one that would control the dreams. And there was, like, several, like, mini stories within these stories that they would tell. Like, this one didn't wake up. This one couldn't go back to sleep. This person dreamed a whole other life that didn't really exist. Mm-hmm. So now he is looking for three very important items that make up the constant
soul stone.
Of course. There was a helmet that he made from the bones of a god.
Sure.
There is a ruby, kind of like a soul stone.
Sure.
But it's a ruby, and it had all of his powers in it, and he would control the dreams with that. And then there was also this endless bag of sand that he would pour on people's...
Yeah.
To make them sleep. So those go missing. So the first couple of issues is him trying to find...
His stuff.
What I'm starting to realize and what I'm noticing in the book is that he is oddly understanding time and regret. And it's an odd paradox because he's been alive for billions of years and he's starting to think, well, wait a minute. Maybe I don't have it all figured out. And maybe I shouldn't have done it this way. Maybe I need to change up a couple of things. So he gets the helmet back when he goes into hell. And to me, that's the most interesting part because it's the same hell envisioned in Swamp Thing. And they even made reference to Swamp Thing twice. The first time is when he goes to hell.
So it's in the DC...
A DC Vertigo universe. It's DC and Vertigo. It's that imprint.
But is Vertigo a different universe or is it just...
Now it's together.
It's the same universe,
well,
but
now
it's
together.
We cuss.
Now it's together.
Oh, okay.
But we cuss. But back then, you would get Martian Manhunter. You would get a Superman nod. You would see Batman. They weren't always in the fabric of these comic books.
Yeah.
So they make mention to Swamp Thing twice. And you really have to pay.
Did you a little fan?
Yes.
Did you giggle? Oh. Did you go, what? Did they say the name Swamp Thing or did they do that thing where they're like, there's a guy who looks green and you're like, ooh, I know who they're talking about.
The latter. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the first part is they talked about the epic confrontation between the dark versus the light and how it kind of went to a draw. It wasn't even a battle. The light stuck his hand out and the dark stuck its hand out and they embraced each other and merged and took off. So now everything in hell is this way and everything in heaven is that way, but there's no battle. There's no internal conflict of good versus evil. It's just an even keel. Whatever they do, they do. Whatever we do, we do. And there's no battle of that. It's drawn, it's referenced, and it's the same look that Swamp Thing's hell was.
Well, what does it look like?
Even the way the monsters are drawn, it's the same thing.
But is it like traditional hell, like fire brimstone?
Even Swamp Thing's hell was fire and brimstone, but yet at the same time, too, it was open plains. There was levels to it. There was guardians. There was, you know, there was knights. There was lieutenants and sergeants. It was real.
Oh, okay.
Like, they really break it down. So he has to battle one of the sergeants for his helmet back. And they play this really odd game of, can you top this? So one of them says, well, I'm a warrior and I have a spear. And Sandman goes, I'm on a horse and I have a mallet. And then he's like, well, I transform into this and I transform into that. And then at the end, Sandman tricks the demon into thinking, well, you know, I'm the universe. And then he goes, well, I'm beyond the universe. I'm everything. And then how he tricks him, and this is what I loved about it. He goes, Sandman, so the demon goes, so what are you? I'm everything. You can't beat me. Sandman goes, I am hope. Hope is in any constant.
That's so Neil Gaiman-y.
Yeah, yeah. And
that
then
sounds great.
And then they set up the dialogue between Lucifer Morningstar and the Sandman, where they kind of hate each other, and they're going to battle it out. And Lucifer even said, I will get this son of a bitch if it's the last thing I do. So Sandman takes his helmet, you know, before he leaves. You know, Lucifer's like, you, where do you think you're going? Just because you walked into hell don't mean you're going to walk out. And he goes, tell me, dream of the endless. How do you think you get out of hell? And he goes, well, I control dreams. And Lucifer goes, there are no dreams in hell. And he goes, you're wrong, Lucifer. Everybody dreams to go to heaven, even the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Beelzebub and Ezreal, who are the second and third in command of hell, look at him and is like, you know you got to let him go. Right, and he's like, I know, and he walks away, and it literally, it's like Moses parting the Red Sea, all the demons part as he walks out.
And this is book one that you're describing?
Yeah.
Volume one?
Why, volume one.
How many volumes is it?
10.
And that was it? Or did they do more at any point?
10 volumes, 75 issues.
Wow. It's one of these things that I'm embarrassed that I haven't read yet.
With books like Sandman and Swamp Thing, you have to, sometimes you got to read the page two or three times.
Sure,
to
yeah.
really understand the gravitas of what they're saying and what they're doing, because yeah. they're also very 80s and topical.
Sure, sure.
So sometimes you got to Google. Like, there's one particular issue where it's set in a diner, and now he's going to get his ruby back. The ruby that pretty much has an abundance of his power. Before he even knew where to track down the ruby, there's a great cameo by John Constantine.
The Hellblazer.
Because he's an occultist detective, so he knows where all this weird shit is.
Right.
So he goes to Constantine's apartment, and Constantine's about to walk in the door, and he's warned, Dream is back. He's like, all right, let me go get on my A game here. And he walks in, and Dream is standing there, all tall and in black, and he goes, oh, I was expecting you. And he goes, will you help me? He's like, yeah, what are you looking for? And he explains it to him. And he goes, listen, we can't run around the streets of London with you looking like this. You can't be wearing these long kimonos and things like that. So in the next panel, it's him wearing a traditional trench coat. He's copying the look of John Constantine, but he's decked out in black. Before they find where the ruby is, Constantine makes a reference of, I really should introduce you to the green bloke. You guys don't get humor the exact same way.
And
that's a reference to Swamp Thing.
You were going, I know what it means.
So anyway, the Sandman fails at getting back the ruby, and Dr. Destiny had the ruby in his possession.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Destiny was in Arkham, and he escaped, and he had this fucking, he's insane, and all this other nonsense going on, and then the ruby was draining his ability to sleep and dream, so now he's withered away, and he's just insane. So now he's sitting in a diner for 24 hours. Sandman's not even in the... He's in the last panel. Mm. And you see this guy fucking with humanity, playing with their dreams, playing with their emotions, making them turn on each other, making them kill each other. And it goes... They break it down every hour.
Mm-hmm.
Every hour. And then it's to the point where Morpheus, Dream the Endless, comes into the diner, and Dr. Destiny goes, I'm bored now with, you know... took you for a while to get here. And he's like, are you gonna give me back my shit, or do we gotta throw down, kind of thing? And you know, Dr. Destiny's like, I guess we gotta throw down. And he was like, but you're weak, you've been in captivity for 70 years, you can't beat me. I took the consciousness of your stone and I made it better. It reads my thoughts now. I took your power. So Dream on some slick shit's like, yo, we ain't doing it on Earth, Pop. You wanna fight? You come to my world. And then he disappears and he goes into the dream world. And that's where I'm up to right now.
That sounds awesome. I really have to read it. That's fantastic.
I wanted to save it. I could have literally knocked it out, but my commute Savor to
it.
Work.
Savor it. Yeah. Savor it.
And then I got to wait another 2 weeks to order the other one.
Yeah.
It just takes a while to come in.
Do you go to the Sears and Roebuck catalog?
No, I go to Comic Book Journal.
And you write them a nice form letter and go, can I have the next issue of the Sandman book, please? I have given you stamps.
Yes, and war bonds.
Yeah, absolutely.
So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, for Sandman Volume 2, The Dollhouse. I will probably give you an in-depth analysis about that, as this will probably be my obsession for the next 10 weeks.
I'm glad that you're going on this deep vertigo journey.
It's bad.
Into yourself.
It's so brooding.
No, but it's good. I think that's where you are in your head.
Yeah.
You're brooding.
I am.
You're brooding right now.
I am.
Let it be.
Okay.
Let it be.
I'm going to dial in.
Yeah. Plug okay. in.
All right. What are you obsessed with?
My obsession is a YA book I just
of
read.
Of course.
It's called Ship It.
Oh, I thought it was Teen Titans Go.
No.
The novel.
No. Oh. I don't know if there's a novel of that yet. I'll write one. It's called Ship It by Britta Lundin, who is a writer. She actually writes for Riverdale, which I don't watch, but the kids tell me it's great.
The kids love it.
So Ship It is an interesting book about fandom. It's about this girl who writes slash fic. So she has a favorite TV show that's called Demon Heart, and it's about this guy who, it's a little bit like kind of like Supernatural. It's like this guy who hunts demons, and then he's got a demon best friend, but they're also like they're enemies, but they care about each other. So she writes slash fic. So she writes fiction where they're together romantically, which they're not on the show. Which is a classic thing, slash fic, you know, going back to Captain Kirk, Spock, slash fic. You know, it's writing a queer depiction of mainstream characters is a big part of fan culture, mm-hmm. or at least a certain part of fan culture.
Yeah.
So she goes to a Comic-Con, and at the Comic-Con, she's at the panel for her favorite show, and the guy who plays the character, the main character, his name is Forrest, is there, and she goes, you know, a lot of fans ship your characters, right? If you know what ship means it's short for relationship. And when you ship something, it means you're rooting for two characters. So she says a lot of people ship these two characters. And then he kind of has a bit of a homophobic reaction. Not like a mean one, but a sort of institutionalized homophobic reaction where he's like, that's crazy. That's not what it is. And it ends up going viral, and everyone is mad at him, and the show says this is terrible PR for the rest of our tour. To every Comic-Con, we're gonna bring this girl, and she's gonna be the moderator, and she makes it her goal to try to convince them to make the characters gay in the canon, and she's also finding her own sexuality. And it's a really sweet book. It's a funny book. It's a great book about fandom. It asks interesting questions, which I think about, which is who owns the text? Does the creator of the text own it, or does the audience own it?
I think it's equal parts.
Okay. There's so much like hate for the new Star Wars movies, and I think, well, fucking Rian Johnson did a good movie, deal with it. But, you know, you could make the argument, well, if people feel that way, then, you know, they're allowed to. I don't know. It's an interesting thing, especially with something like what's going on in the book, where the character is not written as gay, but she sees the character as gay. And there's nothing in the story that says that they're not gay. You know, there's this idea in fandom of head canon, which is the canon inside your head, mm-hmm. meaning like you know that that's not what the author intended, but it's how you read it, and you just, that's what it is inside of your mind. So it kind of deals with that a little bit. It's a really fun book. It's an interesting book. It's got maybe the coolest cover I've seen on a book in years. The cover is, it's supposed to look like the crowd at a Comic-Con. So it's all these profiles, all these faces, and they're not real licenses, which I think even makes it cooler because it's like all these weird aliens and superheroes that you don't really know. And it's just super colorful. It's really beautifully done. It's such a beautiful looking book. And it actually goes through, it's got two points of views, the girl and then the actor. So the actor's not this total bad guy. You know, this actor is a straight guy, and he saw the character straight, and he also wants to be an action movie star, and he's afraid that if everyone thinks his character is gay, he won't be able to be in these action movies. And the book doesn't make him a bad guy. It's really interesting.
That sounds good.
Ship It by Britta Lundin, everybody.
I like that. I like that it holds who owns the text. Is it the canon in our mind? Is that where it should go, or is it the canon of the book? That explores a lot of interesting things.
It's something that I think about a lot. It's come up on this show before.
I think it comes up in ways more with books without pictures. I think you really can't interpret a comic book the way you just described.
Well, you know, let's say you have a character that is never, you never explicitly say what their sexuality is.
Yeah.
you can say, well, I think that this character, I read this character as something, as gay or whatever. And the author doesn't live forever, but the text does, you know? If I want to read, you know, Romeo and Juliet in a certain way, Shakespeare's not around to tell me no. He's gone. He's well gone. You know what I mean? The text lives without the author.
Yeah, but I believe that a cat like Shakespeare, that's been done to death, it's been analyzed, it's been overanalyzed, it's been, you know, this is how it is. Like, there's no new way to analyze,
I don't know,
a Shakespeare piece.
Well, things keep changing. Remember that historical context changes things. I think that people think of Romeo and Juliet as this great love story, but I don't think that was his intention. I think that it's a political allegory. I think that they're young, dumb kids. I mean, when we first meet Romeo, he's crying over Rosalind, I think is her name. So we meet him crying over another girl.
Yeah.
So we think of Romeo and Juliet as, oh, it's this great love story, but I don't think that's what he wrote.
It was the first Riverdale.
I think we should end on that. Romeo and Juliet is the original Riverdale. Do you want to go bye-bye?
Yes. Bye-bye.